5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
When I had come down this hill, I had seen this creature cross the road. It would have ripped my locked door from my truck, extracted me from my vehicle, and there wouldn't have been a damn thing I could have done about it.
This thing, I got to notice its eyes. Its eyes was real, real evil, real sinister looking. The look it was giving me.
What are you reporting?
Jesus Christ, you better... Sheriff, see ya!
Hello?
Get somebody out here.
What's going on now, sir?
That son of a bitch is about 6'9", I don't know.
Do you see him now, sir?
Yes, I'm looking right at him.
Uh-oh.
Welcome to Sasquatch Chronicles, a place where people share their encounters. Let's start the show. What's going on, everyone? Thanks for being here tonight. Thursday night, the weekend is almost here. You know, I've just been slammed all week with encounters. People contact me with their encounters, and I absolutely love it. You know, I spent yesterday from about almost 7 o'clock in the morning to almost 9 o'clock at night, literally on the phone all day long, talking to people about their encounters. And I really enjoy giving people an outlet to express what they saw, express the behaviors they witnessed, without any fear of being ridiculed, without any fear of someone calling them a liar. I enjoy more hearing people's encounters and talking with them about what they saw, probably more than people enjoy the outlet of being able to get it off their chest. But it's been a great week. I hope everyone out there listening, I hope you've had a great week. There's so many bad things going on in this world. You know, I go on Facebook, I get bummed out. Turn on the news, I get bummed out. There's so much negativity. And the subject really is a release for people just for an hour or so to get their mind off of the problems they have going on in their life and just kind of listen to what someone else ran into, some of the stranger things that people ran into. So thank you for being here. I sincerely mean that. Thank you for listening. It's going to be a great night. I've had so many encounters. I almost thought about doing a... I was watching Back to the Future, and they have this all weekend long, you know, where they play part one, part two, part three. I thought, you know, I should do something like that. I have so many encounters now with people who are contacting me. You know, I'd love to just get a show out every night, but there's, you know, I'm only one man. I can only do so so much. If all my focus was just what you're hearing now, it would be easy. But there's a lot of things behind the scenes. At the end of the day, I still love it. I love all of it. Can't thank you enough for listening. I want to give a quick shout out to Tyler D. He's one of the guys on the website, and he's always has something positive to say. And, you know, I really do appreciate it. You know, after a long day, sometimes it's cool to go to the site and see so much positivity. So, Tyler, thank you for being a part of the site. Thank you for being a member. And I'm going to be actually contacting the website developers to see if we can't get the forums up by this evening or tomorrow. I'm still waiting for an answer on them, and I'm still on top of them for that. I have all my moderators in place. So everyone out there listening, let's just kind of keep it positive. Let's keep it a cool place to share ideas. I really do want to keep the forums a positive place for people to share ideas and experiences and just a cool place to communicate. The other one I want to give a shout out to this week is Papa Yeti. another cool guy on there. I really appreciate it. Always giving great feedback, always shooting out ideas. And thank you so much for being a part of the site. And I'll be doing more and more shout outs as we go along. But I usually try and keep the show rolling. So I try not to talk too much about the weather or too many shout outs. But I will be doing more shout outs as the show goes on. You know, it's interesting. I was just talking with a police officer, and I won't mention where he's from. He knows who he is. Him and I had a long conversation, really good conversation. And he was telling me, hey, Wes, you know, I never really truly believed that this creature was out there until I sat and listened to all of the encounters on your show, the people who come forward. And, you know, I talked to a lot of people who will mislead you throughout the day or lie to you, being a police officer. So you kind of get a sense when someone's telling the truth and when they're not. And after listening to your show, he said, hey, I'm convinced that there's something out there running around. And I don't know if you guys have heard this or not. Probably most of you have. There's an instructor here in Washington State, Mitchell Townsend, and he came across a bone pile where something was sitting and eating a deer. And he took measurements from the teeth. He wrote a long paper. He was recently on Coast to Coast, and he was talking about his research findings of this creature that was this predator that was sitting there eating the bones of this deer. Take a listen.
It began in about 2013, the spring of. I was at the foothills of Mount St. Helens and came across a very interesting stack of bones that turned out to be a stack of deer bones that had seemingly giant human teeth marks taken out of them. And consequently, I did some research and came to the conclusion that there was no currently classified carnivore taxa present at Mount St. Helens that would explain that behavior. Thus, I put together a program to try to initiate additional information possibilities. And with that, I taught two classes at a couple of the local colleges in my area. In 2014, two of my former students came across two similar stacks of bones on the other side of Mount St. Helens that had very similar giant hominin front incisor teeth marks. We call them dental avulsion attributed injuries. After a significant amount of research, we determined that there was a comparison and collaboration between these three geographically separated prey bone assemblage sites. And we went further from there and did a huge amount of research in contemporary citations, scientific citations, to determine indeed if this was a possibility. I also did contact the Department of Fish and Wildlife here in Washington State. They did a preliminary assessment of this bone stacking behavior, and they assured me that no, indeed, that there wasn't any currently classified carnivore taxa that could possibly be responsible for that type of material alone. After that, we did some significant measurements on all of the teeth structural signatures. And after about 9 months worth of very intensive research, we came to some very provocative conclusions that included the possibilities, at that time, now confirmed, that a giant hominin creature had lived and had been living in the Mount St. Helens vicinity for some time.
Were you able, Mitchell, to extract any kind of DNA samples from the bones?
At this point, we haven't done that, but we do have flesh still attached to the bones, and we've been in contact with world-renowned DNA geneticists who assured us that that material is indeed present.
Based on the bike marks, Mitchell, how big do you think this hominid might be, and its size, its head? How big is this?
At this point, we based our analysis on a NASA extrapolation from the average Homo sapien, which averages about 5'9" with a foot length of 10.76 inches by 3.6 inches. If you extrapolate those measurements, we came to the conclusion that our unidentified hominin species is approximately 8'8" tall with a 16-inch footprint by 7 inches by 4.5 on the heel, with a stride of 72 inches, correction, a step length of 72 inches, and a stride of 144 inches, both of which are double the size and length of any modern contemporary Homo sapien, thus outside possibility.
My God, and that description alone, Mitchell, echoes what a lot of people who have apparently witnessed creatures like Bigfoot in the Washington State area. That's absolutely incredible.
Not only incredible, scientifically confirmed through forensic dental analysis.
Tell me about some of these 30 PhDs that have that this has been sent to for analysis. What kind of feedback are you getting?
At this point, we haven't received a huge amount of significant feedback because we understand that they're still trying to poke holes in our research. After 30 days, we haven't received one incidence of even questioning our scientific results. At this point, we have 7 confirmed forensic dental characteristics and 1 very possible dental characteristic, which would be called shovel-shaped incisors, and that is primarily a diagnostic characteristic of Neanderthal man, which approximately died out 12,500 years ago. So what we have is a series of interlocking forensic dental analysis signatures that are Homo erectus, Homo sapien in nature, yet size through size measurement and extrapolated analysis are more than double the size in 7 different scientifically confirmed categories, with 1 being almost scientifically confirmed and will be confirmed through microdermal abrasion analysis.
Mitchell, if a human tooth is about a quarter of an inch wide, how big do you think these teeth are?
Well, we looked at averages, average human teeth structures, because it's important to understand that there is a very large interspecies variability ratio between different types of populations. And so what we did was we went back to the scientific literature and found a upper incisor measurement of approximately 6.5 millimeters to 8.5 millimeters, which covered approximately 82% of the world's population with a plus or minus accuracy ratio of 0.5 millimeters.
This could very well be one of the most exciting stories about Bigfoot I have ever heard. You know, we've always had this situation where people have tried to hoax things, where they, you know, had a costume and stuffed it with deer guts and things like that, or the possibility of DNA, which may or may not be the fact. But this story, Mitchell, I don't know. This has some incredible credibility to it.
It's the evidence that we maintain is available free of charge for any scientist or anybody anywhere to examine and reconfirm our measurements. This is forensic dental science. This is material that's hard science that cannot be faked. There were no tool marks, no fire damage, no predator correction, no scavenger marks. So this creature had marked that territory with whatever, probably an olfactory substance, and thus all of the naturally occurring behaviors resident to those populations of scavengers were not occurring. And so consequently, what we have is what we feel is a hunting range or a hunting home range based upon our analysis of 2 different types of science. One is called forensic dental taphonomy. The other is called neoichnology. And both of these sciences are subdivisions of paleontology, very well-recognized scientific analysis. And between our integrated research schematics, we were able to not only measure the teeth, look at the different types of dental signatures and confirm them with the contemporary literature, but also we also found tracks within a quarter of a mile of 2 of the deposition sites.
Oh,
and we were able to track that back 100 yards and reconstruct the track line, and that gave us the measurements on step and stride length, which we could extrapolate into height measurements.
Interesting stuff. I'd sure like to have Mitchell on the show and have him share his findings with the audience. Very, very, very fascinating. Well, tonight's going to be an interesting night. I want to welcome Blake to the show. Blake is actually a researcher, but prior to actually becoming a researcher in this field, he had a couple strange encounters he wanted to share with us tonight. So, Blake, welcome to the show. Thanks for being here tonight.
What's up, man?
And you're down there in Texas, one of my favorite areas. And before we actually get into it, now you have your own, you're part of a research group. Do you want to mention what group you're a part of?
Yeah, I'm affiliated with the Timberline Bigfoot Group. They've been around for about 10 years now. They were nice enough to take in me and teach me the ropes pretty much on as far as what to look for when it comes to looking for Bigfoot.
Prior to your encounter and prior to finding footprints, you were in doing documentaries, correct?
I was mainly into just filming stuff, extreme stuff, like people dirt biking, people doing street stunts on their bikes. You know, anything wild footage-wise, I love to capture. Pretty much how this started was bought a nice video camera right around the time that I graduated from college, and they could shoot Blu-ray video, and my friends were saying, hey, you should make a documentary about something. So kind of fished up on the internet looking for a film subject, and a guy contacted me and said that he was affiliated with the Timberline Bigfoot Research Group, and that if I wanted to hook up with him, I could come film him. So there was like it was a calling, because I had an interest in Bigfoot as a kid, and I was like, this is it. Like, this is what I want to film. This is so, like, perfect for me. Me and this guy met up, and we started researching together.
And tell me about the first time that you guys went out and you found tracks. What did the tracks, what did they look like, and what was going through your mind when you found those tracks?
The first time me and Court Scrimmer went out to his research area, he was showing me stuff, you know, kind of showing me the road signs to look for. We walked around this patch of woods for a couple hours, and I was thinking to myself, I was like, okay, like, I'm skeptical on if this is even a real creature, you know. I was thinking maybe I could devote like 2 or 3 weeks to really looking with this guy, and if it doesn't pan out, at least I tried. But the more we looked, you know, he was showing me stuff, and I was getting bored with it. I was like, I don't know if I could come back out here with this dude looking at trees bent over and stuff, and saying, what if this was a Bigfoot activity and this or that. But, you know, he was telling me that this area was a hotbed of activity. Pretty much we're scanning around the woods, and I saw this tree that was laid over, and it looked like it was picked apart, like something had gotten into it and just, like, stripped it apart. I took notice of it, and I said, hey, Coach, man, let's go check this tree out. We walked over to this tree, and there was chunks of wood all over the fourth floor, like something had been freshly digging in it for grubs or worms or something. When we walked up onto it, that's when we looked down and we saw this giant footprint in the mud right there on the fourth floor. And I froze, and he froze, and I was like, look at that. And I pulled out my video camera and started rolling. And we documented my first print I ever found. I put my arm next to it, and it went from my elbow to about my fingertips. It was long. It was like 18 inches long. And it was pretty deep in the mud, too. But, you know, in the woods in Texas, there's a lot of pine trees and stuff, so there's pine needles in it. It wasn't a perfect print, but you could see toe impressions. You could see a heel impression. And it was bizarre, because out there in the woods in Texas, there's so many vines and stickers and stuff that I was just thinking, I was like, who would be out here barefooted with these giant feet? And it was just, it really sunk in right there, because I thought, okay, this guy, like, he's legitimately got a real research area. Like, he's not lying. This is no, like, this is no fairy tale. There's something going on out here. We documented that print on the video. We put some stuff next to it for size comparison, and took photos of it. And we did a little bit for scanning around the area. About 20 feet away was another stump that was torn apart, and there was a smaller human-like footprint sunk in the mud even deeper, but it was smaller. It wasn't like super giant. It was probably like a size 10 footprint, but there was two tracks out there, and they easily could have been casted, but at the time we didn't have any type of casting material with us. But right then and there, I was sold that this guy was legitimately having Bigfoot experiences out in this part of the woods.
In that part of Texas, do you guys have black bears?
No black bears.
Yeah, and see, I think that's important to note, because some people listening to this may not necessarily believe these creatures exist, but, you know, or have an interest in it, might go, well, why don't you think that's a black bear? Why didn't you think a black bear might have done that? In that area that you're talking about, there really isn't. I think the last time a black bear was seen was like 100 years ago. And so it is interesting. You know, it reminded me of the guy I just had on, Jay, that was saw a Sasquatch pick up a rock, bang it against a tree, stop and listen. He ended up pushing the tree over and digging out a possum and eating it. And then it was tearing apart the stump and eating the grubs. So it really matches up with what you saw.
That's pretty cool. I mean, somebody's seen it. I mean, I kind of just put the pieces together when I saw the stump. I was like, what would really be working into that stump like that? Because chunks of wood were everywhere. It looked like something was really digging through it.
There was another time when you guys were out and you guys were surrounded by them. Do you want to talk about that? What were you guys out in a research area and that happened to you?
We were in the same area. Yeah. After that day, I really sunk my teeth into researching with quartz. At that point on that drive home, I was thinking, like, what's next? Like, you know, that whole 3 weeks scenario that I had, like, I'll give it 3 weeks and see what happens. It was like out the window. It was like, this is a legitimate phenomenon happening. This guy has seen him out here in this area. And my next goal was, okay, like, what do I do? I'm going to try to get one on video. That was my goal. That seemed like completely unfathomable. It was like, there's like no way this will ever happen. This is like a once in a million chance that I could actually put a Bigfoot on video. But I was going to go for it. I was going to sink some time in with this guy and research this area with him. And he said he'd seen him a few times in this area, had visual encounters. So I thought, you know, if he can have visual encounters of him in this area, I'm going to sink some time into this subject and try to see one for myself. I started devising plans on how I was going to do this. And pretty much the first thing was like, get a game camera. Maybe I could capture one on a game camera. Maybe I can lure one in the bait. I listened to all the podcasts that were out there. This is in 2012, so I went back and got on the internet and started listening to all the Bigfoot podcasts and listening to what everybody was using for bait. And a big thing people were using for bait was sardine cans. So I got my game camera and started baiting it with sardines. It was about 4 weeks after I met Quartz, after that first encounter, where we saw the footprints about a month later. We kept going back on a weekly basis to check up on the game camera and switch out batteries and SD cards. We went out there on a Thursday, and it was after work, after I got off of work, me and him shot up there to the research area. And we went up to go check on the game camera, and the bait was gone. And we're like, okay, you know, we didn't think Bigfoot or nothing like that. Like maybe a raccoon got it or something. But we switched out the batteries and the SD card, and we left the game camera running. And it started to rain. It started to rain on us. So we made our way back to the main trail. As we were walking back to the main trail, we heard running through the woods, pretty much in the same area that we had just walked out of. And so we spun around, and I turned on my video camera and started recording. And my buddy, Quartz, he's a professional photographer. That's what he does for a living. So he took out his camera, and he was snapping pictures, and we were keeping an eye out. And these things, they circled us pretty much. One ran to the left of us, one ran to the right. And it happened so quickly. They covered a lot of ground really quick, but, I mean, it sounded, you could hear them sprinting through the woods. And then they came to a complete stop. So we were like, our hearts were beating. What is going on? And he said, man, I think there's two of them out here with us right now. I was like, okay, you know, trying to maintain my composure and trying to document everything on video. And we just stayed real still, and we listened. Sitting there just listening, we could hear them creeping up on us, essentially. You could hear one advancing a few steps at a time, one, two, three, four. You could hear it crunching the branches, and then it would stop. We'd be focused on that direction, and then the one we had our backs to would start advancing towards us, and you could hear it taking about three or four steps forward and then stopping. And so we'd spin around and look in that direction, hoping to see it, hoping to see something. And we couldn't see it. They were perfectly camouflaged, perfectly hidden. But when our attention was averted to the other direction, the one we didn't have eyes in its direction would advance forward. And they kept doing this over and over and over. Man, it was scary. It was terrifying. It was so terrifying, but exhilarating at the same time, because we were the only two people out here at this wildlife preserve. We're the only people out there. It's kind of drizzling. It's kind of close to sunset, and we're just documenting this. And as I'm documenting it with the video camera, we hear one of them vocalize. And the only way I can describe the way this vocalization felt, it felt like I live in Dallas. I've been to the Dallas Zoo. I stood in front of the lion exhibit, and the lion stood there, and it barked at me, and it barked at the audience. It went row, 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 over and over again. And you could feel the bass in this lion's voice. And it, like, shook your organs. That's what it felt like. When this animal vocalized in the woods that day, that's what it felt like. And then what it sounded like, it went, ruff, ruff, just like that. And it reverberated through the woods, and it hit me in the chest, and I felt the bass from this thing, and it sounded like it came, the lungs from this thing sounded huge. And it shook my organs. It paralyzed me. It paralyzed me with fear. And I just kept holding on to that video camera in the direction that I heard this bark come out of the woods from. It instantly clenched up my bladder, and I was like, holy shit, I'm going to piss in my pants. And I told Cortz, I was like, I've got to piss right now. And I relieved myself right there on the spot, not in my pants, but I had to unzip the fly and let it go right there as I stood. We waited a few minutes, and it did it again. It vocalized again. It went, rawr, rawr. And I just had that camera rolling, and I kept zooming into the area where I heard it, and I was hoping I could capture this thing on video, but I could not see it. I could not see this thing with my eyes, and that pissed me off. I was like, I know it's right there. I can hear it. I can hear it. It's only like 150 feet into the woods, and I saw something in there, you know, but my eyes were playing tricks on me because the light from the sun was going down. I couldn't really make out what was in there. I could hear both of them advancing, flowing. You know, the time was passing. The whole encounter lasted about 40 minutes, and that time period went by really quickly, really quick. About after the time I relieved myself, I kind of started to calm down and focus on capturing it all on video, because that was what I was there to do in the first place, was to document this phenomenon. It was really happening, so I was just trying to remain calm and keep my wits about myself and keep the camera steady, try to capture it on video. It quit being as scary because I was thinking to myself, I'm like, okay, like, these things are curious about what we're doing out here, because we're the only two people out here in this nature preserve. And they're not, like, charging at us. They're not throwing things at us. But they are communicating back and forth with each other and, like, slowly kind of creeping up to see what we're doing. As that event progressed, the sun kept setting, and Quartz and I agreed. We're like, man, it's about to get dark real soon. And we both agreed. It's like, let's get out of here. Like, we've caught enough on video. We've caught them vocalizing. I don't think they're going to jump out and show themselves. That wasn't really what they were giving off. So we wrapped it up and we headed back to the car. That car ride home was very, very quiet. And my buddy Cortz, he can talk so much. And I think we both just kind of absorbed it. I don't think he had an encounter out there that lasted that long and was that close. His encounters were kind of short, visuals and knocking back and forth. And
have you ever listened to a gorilla bark?
Yes, I have.
Was it similar to that?
Yeah, it was similar to that. It was.
I've heard other people who've been out in the woods, and they'll have an experience kind of like yours, not exactly like yours, but like yours, and they'll describe that vocalization. They'll say it barked. And it was one of the witnesses that I had on when I was very first starting my show, and I kept looking for a Sasquatch barking, and I couldn't find that audio anywhere. No one had recorded it, but what I came across was a gorilla barking. And I had the witness listen to it, and she goes, yeah, it's like that, but it was way deeper than that gorilla barking, but that was close. So it's interesting that you were able to hear that. Did it worry you at all the way they were coming in on you? It kind of sounds like, I mean, that's kind of how you come in on prey when you're, I mean, I could be wrong, but that's kind of how you come in on prey, you know, draw attention to one side and then flank them from the rear. You know, you can kind of trap prey that way. Did you feel that way, or was it more or less, did you think they were coming in to check you out?
It felt definitely like they were just coming in to check us out. But like you said, man, they advanced on us in a real militarily, strategically way. Like, they had one side of us, and on the other side of us, they had us in the other direction. But the way that the trail led back to the main road where we had parked, it was so close. It was like running distance. Like, that really threw me off. I was like, I cannot believe this is happening so close to a main road. Like, our cars, easily, if we just sprinted towards one of these guys and broke through the woods, this patch of woods, we would have been like right there where our cars were parked. But they had kind of like strategically positioned themselves in the way.
Yeah.
It was so bizarre. It was like, I cannot believe like this isn't happening in the deep, deep woods where you have to trek miles into. And this was close to like suburban sprawl and where that meets the country and the woods. It was crazy.
Yeah, they move like the military, like special forces in the woods. But, you know, most encounters, to be honest with you, rarely do I get any encounters where someone says, I hiked in 10 miles and had an encounter with one of these things. Off the air, I'll generally ask people, hey, how far is the nearest highway from where your encounter happened? And, 10, 15 minutes away. You know, we're talking major freeway. They're really not out in the deep, deep woods like most people think.
I think that they enjoy hanging close to urban sprawl, that maybe they're interested in like checking us out. That's what it felt like.
Well, I know there's a campground in Washington, and they are constantly seen in this campground. But what's funny is most of the behavior that people report is them going through the trash, eating old food. And, you know, I think that we're kind of sloppy out there when we're out. In that particular situation with the campground, they may be, it might be quick, easy food for them to, because they're seen in this campground, and everyone I've talked to has said, well, yeah, they were going through the trash, or they were going through someone's campsite that had just left. But you're right, you really don't have to go that far out.
No, not at all. And that's what I like about this area, is it's close enough to home to get out there every weekend and pound some ground. And I've done a lot of that over the past 3 years. I've had a handful of bizarre experiences with them.
Yeah, well, I wish the best when you're out there. I mean, I really hope that you're able to get them on camera. I don't think most people realize when they think of Texas, they think of desert, they think of flat land, big wide open skies. But that's really not, there are portions of Texas like that. But when you go in the eastern portion of Texas, it's pretty heavily wooded. I mean, even when I was down there with Bob and the guys, it kind of reminded me of Washington State. You really can't see 20 feet into some of this brush. It's so thick.
Yeah, true. And that is scary when you're in close proximity to one and you cannot see 20 feet around you, but you know it's in there.
Yeah, and that is scary. Well, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show, man.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on, Blake. I really do appreciate it. You know, I was talking to Lonnie from TexlaResearch.com, and they do a lot of different recordings that they capture some pretty good stuff. And Lonnie, I'm working on getting him on the show along with the founder of Texla, Scott Kessler, on the show to share some of their encounters. And the guys really do have some great audio on their site. So if you get a chance, check it out. It's TexlaResearch.com. And this is actually from their site. This is some whoops that they captured out in East Texas. Let's take a listen. And this other one is actually from East Texas too as well. They were out doing some vocalizations, and this is a response that they got and captured on audio. Let's listen to this. Our good friend Shane Corson, along with Gunner, is going to be having, they're doing a hopsquatch event July 19th down in here in Portland, Oregon. And I maybe swing by and say hi to everyone. So if you get a chance, it's July 19th here in Portland, and they're asking for people who are in the area that have had an encounter with Sasquatch to come check it out. The website is hopsquatch.com. So if you get a chance, check that out. And if you're able to make it to that July 19th event, I may swing by and say hi to everyone. Other than that, if you get a chance, please visit sasquatchchronicles.com. Check out some of the member content. I'll be back on Saturday for a show. Please swing by, show your support. Other than that, everyone, I hope you have a great night. And I will see you this weekend. Have a great night, everyone.